If you've got a book in you and you're struggling to bring it out, you should absolutely check in with our sponsor, Author Accelerator, where they can match you up with a book coach who suits your work no matter where you are in the process. And if it's the book coaching part of that that intrigues you, Author Accelerator also trains its book coaches in everything that goes into working with writers and running a book coaching business. You can find out more about that at bookcoaches.com/amwriting.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay.
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantilla, and this is #AmWriting, the podcast about writing all the things, short things, long things, nonfiction, fiction, pitches, proposals. This is the podcast about sitting down and getting your work done. We are mixing things up a little bit this week. I am soloing, so I will tell you that I am the author of the novel The Chicken Sisters, as well as the nonfiction book How to Be a Happier Parent. I'm a former editor and the lead writer of the Motherload blog at the New York Times, and at the moment I am working hard on revising book number 2. And today's guest, Olga Mecking, is a freelance journalist who's enjoyed exactly the version of success that many freelancers dream about. She went from publishing her own work on her blog to pitching outside publications, gradually reaching bigger and bigger audiences until her article, The Case for Doing Nothing in the New York Times, became a breakout success and led to a book contract for her new book, Nixon, Embracing the Dutch Art of Doing Nothing. I know you'll enjoy this interview. We go deep into building a freelance career and the nuts and bolts of making that happen. And as I said, we're shaking things up a little bit this week. So I interviewed Olga solo, which made a nice break for me from the novel revisions that I'm working on, or at least staring at. Olga, thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to the #AmWriting podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
You are welcome. This is my first time solo interviewing for the podcast, so I'm excited, and we're going to have a really good time. I've got a lot of things I want to ask you about. So just to start off with, you are what I think of as kind of a classic freelancer. You will apparently, just judging from what I've read that you've written, you'll write about anything. Your work is all over the map. It's not political. It's not driven by some topical passion. You know, you don't specialize in some particular area. You are just writing about life from all kinds of angles. Does that sound about right?
I think it does, because I've always read this advice, you know, as a writer, you have to specialize. And I've always resisted that simply because, you know, why would I limit myself to one topic?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you can have a specialty, and that's great. And I mean, nobody appeals to everyone or writes about everything. But there's also this idea of writing sort of generally things that apply to a lot of people rather than really narrow and specific interests. So I wanted to just go back and ask you, how did you get started in the world of freelancing?
Oh, with freelancing, I think that was to 2016, or maybe a bit earlier than that. But I had a blog before, which I started in 2011, after a woman called the police on me because my eldest daughter had a temper tantrum in public.
In the Netherlands?
In the Netherlands, yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So, you know, it's not just an American issue, I guess. Although there are differences because at the same time, Kim Brooks had the same thing happen to her. And she had to go to court and she had to plead guilty. And for me, the police arrived and they were like, yeah, yeah, whatever, go home. You know, they kind of wrote my address and my phone number and stuff. But otherwise, they were, no, you know, go home. It's okay.
Man, if somebody had called the police on me every time... One of my kids in particular, we spent a lot of time, we just pull over by the side of the road because she'd do it in the car. And me and the other kids would get out, do things, leave her screaming. Yeah. Wow. So that's a story. All right. Well, that's a different story. But so you started with a blog and then at some point decided to take this to another level. So tell me about that decision.
Yeah, so one thing I noticed was that blogging was becoming so professionalized, and something that would take me maybe max an hour would take so much longer, because I didn't just have to write my post. I had to prepare it for SEO. I had to add pictures and different pictures for different social media. It became annoying. And at that time, Susan Macarelli started her website and group Beyond Your Blog, which was a great way for people to kind of reach out to bigger outlets like, you know, newspapers and magazines, including the New York Times. And I thought, okay, this is weird, but maybe I can do that too.
Don't worry, we're going to get to the New York Times. Yeah. Absolutely.
No, so I didn't think of the New York Times first, but slowly with like parenting websites, like Scary Mommy, Mama Load, Wash Post even. I had a Wash Post byline pretty early because I guess I got a good story that I pitched to them and they liked it. It was about neuroparenting and this idea that we kind of have to understand our kids' brains in order to raise them right. And I kind of wrote a response to that saying, no, actually, do we really need all that?
Well, that is a great way to get to my next question, which was, do you sit around and generate a lot of ideas, or do you generate specific ideas for specific markets? Do you have a process where you track things that might turn into ideas? How do you come up with it all?
It's everything. So I do have, like, I go through websites and I say, I want to be published there. And then I kind of try to come up with a story that would fit that publication. But also I walk around all the time and ideas just fall, like they don't fall into my head. It feels like they fall into my head, like there's an idea and that is an idea. And there are so many things where we went to eat just in some restaurant in the Netherlands, and my husband ordered something called the Dutch Wheat Burger. And I thought, if something is called Dutch Wheat Burger, that's interesting. And there might be a story behind it. And there was, so I wrote about this. So a lot of it is just walking around, reading lots of random stuff. And some of it turns into stories or books even, like my latest ones.
I've noticed that a lot of your work seems to sort of be like one thing meets another thing, meets me thinking about the things.
Yeah. So there might be, you know, like food and social justice, or there was one story I wrote because I'm originally from Poland, and there was this video campaign trying to kind of create unity between Polish people by the power of bread. So this is like food meets social justice, meets social activism, meets the media. That was really nice to write. Another one was, so I do like writing those stories that kind of combine two things together. One I wrote was about, so I read, because I live abroad, there's this term culture shock used around a lot with, you know, people living abroad. And I thought, oh, I know this, but not because I live abroad, but when I became a mother, that was kind of like moving to a whole different country and with its own language and behavior and totally different ways of being. And that was a bigger culture shock than actually moving to the Netherlands. So I wrote about that.
So what does a typical pitch look like for you? I know our listeners really love to hear sort of the nitty gritty of how people who are getting it done well are getting it done.
Yeah, so I guess it's all if it's not an essay, because that's what you'll probably have to write from scratch. But if it's like a feature, for example, then I would probably start. Oh, it also depends on the story. If it's, you know, sometimes it would be a scene, and sometimes it would be a statistics or a number, or sometimes I would start with things like, if it's an international story, I would start with, in the US things are like this, but in the Netherlands or in Poland or Germany things are like that.
Right.
So, and I think with every pitch, what is what I find is important is to give the editor something that she will recognize, because that so she has to know that it's for her paper or website. Mm-hmm. But also something that will make her go, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's interesting.
Perfect. So that's a little. It's something you know, something familiar plus a surprise equals, ooh, I want to publish that.
It's more like, yeah, something she knows and something I know, right?
So right.
I think it's a combination of those two things. And then, of course, if I've written about something similar in the past, then I'm going to mention that. I'm going to mention my credentials. Mm-hmm. Like if I write about Poland, I say I'm actually Polish. Or if I write about the Netherlands, I say I live here. I speak the language. I've been living here for more than 10 years.
So those are more credentials for why you should write about a specific topic than credentials. I mean, now you've got really great clips, as they say. Now you can say, yeah, I wrote for the New York Times. I've written for all these other places. But when you were first getting started, it sounds like you relied more on why you were the right person to write about it for other reasons.
Yeah, and I think I also relied on kind of having unique stories that no one else could write. Because mm-hmm. to be honest, what I do makes no sense. English is my third language. I've never been to the U.S. And I keep writing for, you know, mostly American audience. It makes zeros. It's ridiculous. But because of that, I'm able to come up with this, with those really unique stories that no one else would write.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me just say that your third language is so much better than my third language. I'm working on it. But I speak Spanish is what I'm working on right now. And my problem is that my second language is French, and my French is decent. But whenever I don't know a Spanish word, and because I started Spanish late, my vocabulary gaps are huge. My brain is just like, here, have this French word. It'll do just as well. Like, why not just try this one? And I don't always realize that I'm doing it. So it can be really embarrassing.
Yeah. Imagine if languages are kind of similar to one another. It happens to me with German and Dutch too.
Yeah.
Because I've been speaking German since I was 3, because I lived there as a kid. Mm-hmm. And I started learning Dutch. So a lot of it is quite similar, but also different. So I never know, if I don't know a word, will they use kind of the German version of it or the English one?
Because right.
Kind of English and similar to English, and some of it is similar to German, so I really see the problem here.
And I just feel like my brain has created like one large category called other languages, and I'm like, no, brain, we've got a few here. So maybe after another year, it will get better. But it would help if I were allowed to leave my country. But we're working on that, right?
No.
Okay. So. Now I want to get to talking about the article that led to the book. And I've got a lot of questions about that. Let me start with, so your what I'm going to call the breakout article was called The Case for Doing Nothing.
Yeah.
And that led eventually to your new book, Nixon, Embracing the Dutch Art of Doing Nothing. And I think a lot of writers worry that they need something big to pitch, especially if they're pitching it somewhere big, right? They need a big tie to a news story or a big idea or a big opinion. And you literally pitched an article about nothing. And I want to know how you talked yourself through that process of, yes, the New York Times is going to be interested in something about nothing.
Yeah.
And I know that that getting it into the Times was a process. So let's put that part of it. That'll be my next question.
Yeah. Okay. So because as I said, I kind of go places and I find ideas, or I read things, and also read, like I sometimes read all those obscure little magazines, like Super Local or things that are for free in supermarkets or stuff like that in Dutch. So to see, you know, if there are stories in there that no one else would find.
Mm-hmm.
I got a box, like a, what do you call it? Like from a supermarket, you get a box, you collect stickers, and then if you have all the stickers collected, you get a box with stuff in it from the supermarket. And it's it's for kind of like a taster.
Sure.
It's like a taster. Just so you get, and the supermarket market sells organic stuff, so all the stuff was organic, and there was a wellness magazine inside called Gezond Nu, which means healthy now. And inside in that magazine was an article called Nixon is the New Mindfulness. And I absolutely love two things about this. One was, that's so cool. The Dutch have one word for doing nothing, because in English you would have to say to do nothing or not to do anything, which is a lot of words.
And which is arguably contradictory, because you're doing nothing.
You're doing nothing, I know.
There always has to be doing in English.
Yeah. And Polish is like double negation, so you say like to not do, you know, it's more complicated, but you usually need lots of words to say something in the direction of doing nothing, but in English, in Dutch, you just say Nixon. Mm-hmm. That was so cool. Very easy, very practical, easy to pronounce compared to some other wellness trends that are not so easy to pronounce, maybe. And then the second part was the mindfulness part, because I was reading so much about mindfulness, and I know it helps many people relax or calm down or kind of, you know, face challenges during the day. But for me, it was like reading those articles and those books felt, okay, I've got so much stuff to do, so much on my mind, and now I also have to be mindful on top of that, right? So I found that very annoying, and I thought, oh, maybe you could need something instead of mindfulness, or maybe I thought kind of instead of mindfulness, but it could be beside it, like it doesn't have to be one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked into it, and I first wrote about it for a little wellness magazine called Woolly, a very quirky wellness magazine, which I really enjoyed reading, or enjoyed. I'm not sure if they're still publishing. And the first kind of sign that something was going on there was that article I wrote for them, it didn't go viral, or not the same way as the New York Times articles did. But it was very popular.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew at the time, Tim Herrera, the Smarter Living editor at the New York Times, was looking for pitches. So because I think he said it on Twitter even. So mm-hmm. Kind of open about that. If he's looking for pitches, he'll say it. He'll say that he's looking for pitches. And so I find if I have the idea, yeah, if I have the publication and the editor's email address, that makes it much easier for me to pitch than if I have to look for all these things.
Yes.
Like all the hurdles and the obstacles are gone. And for me also, you know, if I had to do it by phone or by mail or any other some super complicated way, I wouldn't have done it. But because it's email, because I'm thousands of kilometers, miles away, it just doesn't concern me as much. So I just mm-hmm. could send an email, and if it doesn't work out, I'll forget about this.
Right.
So that also makes it easier for me to reach out to those editors in the US.
And it didn't work out the first time, right?
No, he rejected it, actually. Yes, he did.
Before we go on, what did you send him a pitch or did you send him an essay?
I sent him a pitch.
Okay.
Because I knew Smarter Living is a service kind of story.
Right.
Service kind of story, so an essay wouldn't work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I sent him a pitch for Smarter Living. For Well Family, I sent a whole essay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a different, that's a different topic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I will link to that in the show notes too. So did you pitch the Time Smarter Living before or after you wrote the Woolly piece?
After.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's also, I mean, it's nice to be able to jump from one topic to another, but it also can be tiring. So I thought maybe I could learn to write different kind of stories from the same idea.
Yeah, brilliant.
So I knew that the first Woolly piece was more of a trend piece, and a Smarter Living would be a service piece, so a how-to, basically.
Right. So how did the editor come back around to you?
A few months later, he asked me if we could revisit it because he felt the time was more right for this sort of story.
Wow. That must have been a fun email to get.
It was amazing because it was the first time it happened to me ever. I've never had an editor, if editors reject a story, they reject a story. That's it.
Yep.
But for the first time, and so far the only time, it was, and I really appreciated that, because he was an editor who took the time to read through his old emails,
mm-hmm.
to see if there's something in there.
Yeah.
I know editors are super busy right now, right? So that Tim Herrera took the time to do this, it was amazing. It was really, really great of him.
And so how was writing it for Smarter Living? What was the experience like? Was, similar to writing for other things, or?
No, not really. It was just so much more intense.
Mm-hmm.
So many more people to interview, because I usually do pieces with one or two sources, and this one had like five. And I did lots of interviews, and I usually do long interviews, because here, mm-hmm. this expert on the phone or on Skype or whatever, and so I, maybe he can tell me something interesting, or she tell me something interesting that I could use to write a difference, another story. So
right.
I keep an eye on that as well. And yeah, so interviewing people, transcribing it, and then writing the story, it was very, very. It was a very intense process, but I actually enjoy it, because if an editor is hands-on,
mm-hmm.
for me, it means they care.
Right.
Like, it means they care about my article being the best one possible, and not being a native speaker of English, I also appreciate the help. So I really like that. I know there are writers who don't appreciate being edited. I do.
I love being edited. So... how did it go from article to book contract? Did you pitch it, or were you approached?
For the book, I was approached.
Mm-hmm.
Because the article unexpectedly went viral. So I didn't write it to go viral. I just wanted to write the story. I wanted to get the story out, but it went mm-hmm. viral. And after a while, I wrote it in May. It was published in May. And then by July, Nixon was everywhere. It was all over the place. Yeah, so that got me the attention of a book publisher.
And they came to you. And I noticed that right about exactly the same time, your bylines slow down significantly. So I am guessing that you had a really fast turnaround. Can you tell us about the process for the book?
Yeah, it was fast simply because it's a trend book. So mm-hmm. things kind of, in a year or two or three, maybe Nixon would be, the next thing would be on her horizon. So that would be too late, would have been too late. And also in the Netherlands, because my publisher is Dutch, and they noticed that there was a different Dutch writer who would also write a book about Nixon, and they wanted to be first. So I had a tough deadline.
So did you write in English or in Dutch?
English.
And is it published in the Netherlands in English or in Dutch?
It is. No, my publisher, it's actually both, because they already had an English version. So they kind of, they made a English version for the Dutch and Belgian market, and mm-hmm. also a Dutch version.
And then... an American publisher picked it up probably before it was published, I would guess.
Yeah. No, most all the versions.
Sub rights.
Like yeah. They all happened before the book was even written. So.
Wow. So, had you pitched other books in the past, or was this?
No, I thought about it. I self-published a few ones. But it was never something written by me alone. It was an anthology of writings by expert women in the Netherlands.
Yep.
One was a translation I did of my grandfather's Holocaust memoir, which I translated into English. But I've never written a book by myself. Yeah, so, and I thought about it because, it wouldn't be cool to write a book, right? But then I read all... the experiences of other writers, and it sounded like a nightmare to send your book out to agents. I have it rejected, and they were, in the ballpark of 100 agents. And I said, oh, yeah, no.
So how is the process of writing a book versus writing an article?
Well, obviously longer.
Yeah. And I noticed that you are a really, you quote a lot of people. You must have done so many interviews. So I guess my other question is, how did you balance conveying your own thoughts and ideas versus supporting them with research and interviews?
Yeah, so I wrote a very, very crappy first draft very quickly. And then I kind of started reading and filling it out with interviews and stuff that I read in books. I thought it was very important for me to kind of, okay, I'm writing a wellness book, but at least the stuff I'm writing will be, you know, grounded in research.
Mm-hmm.
And if I say something wrong, then you can, I kind of like hiding behind, like, I like writing articles as opposed to essays because, you know, an essay is all me.
Yes.
It's all me. And I feel like responsible, like making a movie all by myself when I'm responsible for the acting and the lighting and the music and the scenography and everything else. And with an article, I can always, you know, pull up my expert and say, hey, it's not just my idea. He also says it and she also says it. Right.
Right.
So, that's why I also wrote this book this way, with lots of research and quotes and stuff.
Will you do it again?
I might. Also in the works right now. So.
Well, that was my next question: is what are you working on? You don't have to give us your book proposal, but so are you a book? Are you pitching freelance again now that the book is out into the world? What's your?
I want to do that, and I've tried doing that. It's not working out because I'm distance learning. I mean, not. I'm obviously not distance learning, but my kids are. In the first part of the day, I just don't have the time because I'm busy kind of getting them motivated to learn and figuring who has Zoom, what kind of Zoom meeting when, and getting them to work and. Providing snacks and food and drinks and everything. And after that, I'm just so tired that I cannot think. So I've got ideas in my head. The article I tried to write during this time, it just got killed because it didn't work out and I couldn't make it happen. So I'm feeling a little bit sad about it, but I hope that I'll be able to write again soon. Yeah. And the book proposal I'm writing now or working on now is parenting related.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so how parenting has become so difficult and why, and also in the direction of it's not all the parents' fault.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I personally think writing a nonfiction book proposal is kind of fun because it's a little like an article in that there are very specific metrics that you need to meet and you can check them off of a nice list, which I'm a huge fan of doing. Yeah. So I think it's kind of nice because it gives you something. Also, if you can't do anything else, maybe you can come up with two comps or something.
Yeah.
You know, you can do the smaller things on the days when you can't do the bigger.
Yeah,
things.
Exactly. So I also find it very helpful to write nonfiction in the way that it's just so structured.
Mm-hmm.
And, you have the genre. I mean, in fiction also you have genres, but nonfiction, like if you're writing in wellness books, you have to include, you know, this and that. There has to be advice.
Right.
But also what I liked writing Nixon was that it's a wellness book and I'm not a fan of wellness trends at all. So I could, took this chance to kind of do this book my way.
Yeah. Yeah. You got a good amount of commentary on what you think of the wellness trend as a concept, I guess, is a good way to put that.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I kind of use this chance to, you know, be a little bit funny and say, you know, look at me, I'm this guru person. And
so this is a great moment to take a quick pause. We're going to hear from one of our sponsors. And when we come back, we are going to talk about what both Olga and I have been reading lately.
Hey, Am Writers, Jess here. I'm so sorry to be stuck in this groove, but I watched Victoria on BBC Masterpiece Theatre, and so now this week I'm listening to a course by Patrick and Alit, PhD, on Victorian Britain, and it's really cool because it really rounds out some of the historical tweaks they made in the Masterpiece Theatre. Whenever I watch something like that, I need to know what the real history was, not the tweaked and romanticized history, but the real history. And on the Great Courses Plus course on Victorian Britain, I'm getting the true story. I'm getting the real history. If you're interested in learning something new this week, you can go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/amwriting and get an entire month for free. You can download the app to your phone. You can watch a video on your phone. You can do just audio on your phone. I pretty much have a book or a course going all the time whenever I'm outside working on something or going on walks. It's just a great way for me, a multitasker, to learn and exercise at the same time. So thegreatcoursesplus.com/amwriting and go learn something new.
All right. So, I love this part because I love talking about books. So I'm going to ask some general booky reading questions first before we get specifically into what we've been reading. So for you, fiction or nonfiction?
Both. I'm quite open with books. So if it's a book, I'm probably going to read it. So I'm quite, I don't discriminate when it comes to books. Like I'm going to read nonfiction, I'm going to read fiction, I'm going to read, you know, literary, I'm going to read bestsellers.
What language do you like to read in?
I mostly read in English because that's what I have available on here.
Mm-hmm. You're showing me a Kindle.
Yeah, this is my Kindle. but also German books are also available on the Kindle as well as ebooks. My mother-in-law, who's German, brings me German books to read.
Mm-hmm.
And when my family visits, they bring me Polish books to read.
Nice.
So I get the whole spectrum of books. That's nice.
I feel like ebooks have really changed the experience of being an expat reader. I remember, traveling for long periods of time, 10 or 15 years ago. And, if you hadn't brought a stack with you, it was hopeless. But then the minute the Kindle appeared, it just got so much easier.
Yeah. I agree. You don't have to take the whole library. Like you can take your whole library with you, literally.
And you can get things. Like, you don't have to go to the international bookstore and spend four or five times as much as a local language book costs. I like reading paper, but for that, the ebooks have just been amazing. So how many books do you typically have going at once?
What I'm reading at the same time,
mm-hmm.
mostly one, sometimes two. So I might have one book that I'm reading on the Kindle and one paper book.
Right.
That, for example, my mother-in-law, my mom has brought me from Poland to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to switch between those two.
And are you somebody who knows what you're going to read next, or do you finish a book and then go and find something? Do you have a stack sitting there or an e-stack?
Yeah, I do. So I get every few weeks I got like 10, it used to be 10, now it's more books, and then I go through them one by one.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like switching, so if I read a novel, then the next one is going to be probably nonfiction, or the next one is going to be poetry, and next one is going to and also topics, like if one was dark and
mm-hmm.
the next one will be lighter.
Yeah, I've been trying to mix up my authors lately, too. Like, if I just read one by, somebody just like me, I'll try to read one that's by somebody that is not like me in one of any of a myriad of ways. Dark to light, all of that. It's fun to create that kind of balance in your reading life.
Yeah, it's nice because you get all kinds of different moods from the book you're reading. Yeah, and I just like reading, like the action of it, the process of it.
Yes. Oh, the escape is so lovely. Well, specifically, what have you been liking lately?
Recently I read this novel called The Confession by Jessie Burton.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got this kind of double narrative going, which I like. I like books that have, for example, there are two families or two people and their stories switch from chapter to chapter, and at the end it all comes together. Or some part of the book is in the past and part of the book is happening now. So I kind of like those switching perspectives. And this is what it says now, and it has this mother, like a daughter looking for a mom kind of narrative, which is interesting. It's women's fiction, which I also enjoy reading. And a series I'm really enjoying is actually by a friend of mine who is, she lives in Oxford and she's writing those amazing magical Oxford stories. It's like,
those are just candy.
And friend, it's cozy mystery, but with magic and in Oxford.
I love cozy mysteries. Okay, wait, what are they again?
The series is called Oxford Key Mysteries.
Okay.
Yeah, and so there are four books out now, maybe even five. I think the fifth one is coming out soon.
Cool.
And it's just so nice to read because it's just so nice and cozy and warm and magical. And it's just perfect for these times, I think.
Mm-hmm. Cozy mysteries are so nice because, okay, sure, somebody died, but it's invariably nobody you cared about, usually somebody bad. Or just at least somebody you didn't meet. And then they end. And justice is done. And everything is fine. And
yeah, and it's so nice. And this one has dragons.
Ooh.
Books has dragons, then I'm all for it.
Yes, I'm there for dragons. That's what I need. That's what I need in my reading life this month. I'm thinking of every book I have read this month so far has been very realistic. I gotta grab one next that features dragons or witches or space or something. That's a good call.
Yeah, and it's nice to have this kind of different choices, right? So you just don't keep reading the same thing all over again. I mean, if it's your thing, oh my god, of course, read the same thing all over again, right? But
right.
I just like mixing things up.
Agreed. All right, so let's see. I'm going to give a currently reading, even though I usually don't share books until I know for sure whether the person is going to stick the landing, but I've got pretty good confidence in this one. I am reading the latest Reese Witherspoon Book Club young adult pick. It's called Cuban Girl's Guide. Actually, is it the latest? There might be one. There's actually one since, so I'm one back. Sorry. Anyway, it's called The Cuban Girl's Guide to Tea and Tomorrow, and it's got a hysterical protagonist who's an older teenager who's already just making me crazy because she knows everything. And she's a Cuban from Miami, transported to live with family temporarily in England, thus the tea, I suppose. And she's a baker, and I love books with baking in them. And so far, it's been really fun, and I have every faith that it will continue to be fun all the way up till the end.
Sounds like a fun book to read.
Yeah, I'm not usually a YA reader, but I've been grabbing a few more lately. It just, you know, what I'm discovering is that I'll think to myself, well, I'm not sure I like books like that. And then, but if it's a good book, like somebody who really knows what they're talking about has recommended it, I'm almost always going to enjoy it anyway. And that's really helping me expand the old reading list.
Yeah, I think YA books they have to be good these days because they're, you know, they're competing with the internet and everything else that's going on in a teen's life or a young adult's life. So they have to be good to even get the people's, you know, the audience's attention.
And I guess that they have something in common with what we were saying about the cozy mystery, which is that usually a YA book has got like pretty intense themes, and they aren't all like super happy ending or anything like that. But I feel like they're really kind of can be emotionally cathartic because, you know, for teens, everything is super intense. And there's that feeling of everything turning on one moment or one person that I think the older we get, the less we have that feeling. So to go back and enjoy it again in the form of a book is, I think it's fun.
It is. And I think also why is it really on the forefront of diverse books right now? As far as I'm reading.
Also true.
Yeah. So that's also so important.
Yeah. Agreed. Well, this has been fantastic. Let me say again that Olga's book is Nixon, Embracing the Dutch Art of Doing Nothing. And where can we find you?
Me? Facebook mostly.
Facebook mostly? Okay.
Yeah, so there's my page, and there's me, and there's my group, which is called the Nixon Years.
Ooh, okay. We'll be sure to link to that.
Like the Musketeers, but with Nixon, Nixon Years.
We love a good Facebook group.
And the book is available on Amazon, obviously, and probably bookstores around the US as well.
I would think so. Yeah. Everywhere, presumably, everywhere books are sold as these things go. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Really enjoyed talking to you. And I guess because I'm the only one sitting here today, it's going to fall to me to close out the show with the usual call outs to get in touch with us in our Facebook group, which is #AmWriting, and to keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The #AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Pause. Stop.
Stop.
Thank you.